In another part of Baron Zeal's big house, in a much more genteel room, Trader was starting to feel poorly. His abdomen had become severely bloated. So bloated that it was painful for him to move about.
Was it the ale? The brandy?
With an effort, Trader pushed up from the bed and propped himself on an elbow. He was decidedly woozy, not to mention weak in the legs, flushed in the face, sweating like a pig, stomach churning and distended, like it was filled with air.
Oh, the food. Nothing tasted off at all. And it wouldn't make sense for him to poison me. Before we go, the wags would be useless. Maybe they just want me sick. Triple risky, though. Too much and I die. Serve them right, the stoops. Oh, maybe I just got sick from some shit-addled slave. Who knows what diseases are in this ville?
Lurching to his feet, Trader staggered for the chamber's commode. Though he felt desperately ill and had ingested a large quantity of plutonium dust, the fates smiled on Trader that day. For the substance Zeal had acquired years earlier possessed only a speck of the radioactive material. Hun stepped away from the curb into the middle of the street and into the oncoming lights of the Sekwag. While wearing a uniform cap and bloody vest, she waved her arms over her head for the vehicle to stop.
Thanks for dropping by, boys. Damn it, the guy fell on the horn. All right, guys, I'm in.
Wagson Park?
Sure is.
Then help me strip these bodies. We can't have anybody thinking these are Sekmen we just killed.
While the two of them stripped the Sekmen of all identifying clothing and gear, Ryan lugged the three 15-pound gunny sacks of C4 and JB's detonator bag over.
Where should I put this?
In the trunk.
Right.
The detonator bag Ryan kept.
All right. Everybody inside.
Bodies taken care of?
Yep. A pair of naked men by the roadside with big honking blaster wounds to the head won't actually attract a lot of attention in this shithole. Whew, this wag doesn't smell too good up here in front. Almost like the Sekmen shit on themselves. Oh, jeez!
Hey, could have happened to anybody.
But why'd it have to happen to us? Oh!
Then let's air the place out.
Ryan lifted his boots above the dash.
Thank you. That's much better.
They roared off in the direction of the refinery. Neither Ryan nor Poet suggested that she slow down. Both knew it wouldn't have done any good. Hunniker was in kill mode. As she approached the looming structure, Hun cut the headlights and took her foot off the gas. The wag coasted to a stop next to the curb two blocks away from the plant, which was lit up bright as day, inside and out. Through the open hangar doors, they could see workers moving about, lugging oil drums, lengths of pipe. Some were in chains, some weren't. There was a Sekmen presence outside the refinery. Three guards manned a little hut at the entrance to the grounds, and two men were at the giant doorway, checking the workers as they entered and left. More guards stood inside the structure, and they traveled in squads of five and six, enforcing the order of the men in pinstriped overalls, the crew bosses with clubs and bullwhips.
Getting in isn't going to be so easy.
Getting out, either.
Well, what we can do...
Oh, gosh, shit!
What the hell was...
Shift whistle.
You think they heard?
Quiet. Look.
Refinery workers started to file out the hangar doors. Only those without chains, it seemed. The Sekmen stationed there looked over ankles and necks for collars and manacles. Those with chains didn't leave the plant.
Replacement workers will be coming in soon. That'll be our chance to get inside.
While they waited for the graveyard shift to appear, Hun took off her Sekmen bill cap, thumb-wheeled open her SOG one-hander, and started to saw off the brim. In a few seconds, she had turned it into a skull cap, which mostly hid her alarmingly green hair. Poet rummaged through JB's detonator gear in the back seat.
JB's got some real sophisticated stuff in here. Look at this one.
This device is nuke-powered. Check the hazard symbol on the back. Range on the signal has got to be a couple of miles or more.
Yeah, those are all motion vibration sensing detonators with mercury switches. JB didn't make them, he traded for them. Those are pre-dark, state of the art.
Got a bunch of standard contact detonators in here too. How do you want to play this?
You're the war captain, you tell me.
I want to hear how you'd do it.
Be nice to use those motion sensors. That way, we don't have to be around to trigger the big boom.
Might not even need to be alive to do it.
The way I see it, we need a small, conventional, remote detonated charge. And we need to set it someplace on the edge of the refinery. We use it to prove to Zeal that we mean business, that we've been inside his plant and we've laid our mines. After we blow up the sample charge, we tell him to evacuate the plant. And after he does that, we remote arm the motion sensors. We show him one we haven't rigged with C4 to let him know what he's up against. That if anybody sets foot inside, the whole place will blow. Then we sit down and make a deal for Traitor and all our wags. And we don't disarm the mines until we're over the top of the farthest rise.
Boy, is that gonna piss the bastard off. Zeal's gonna be tap dancing in those high heels of his.
And assuming your plan works, assuming that we get the crew and the wags back, what then? Do we just roll off into the sunset like none of this ever happened?
That's up to Traitor. He's the boss. And he's the one who's been put through the mill by Zeal. If it was up to me, I think you know what I'd do.
Stop on the way out of town and lob one 2.75-inch rocket into the plant?
You got it. Hun, get the stuff.
As the first graveyard shift worker started to shuffle past the SecWag, Poet and Ryan began to sort the detonators for rigging. Hun opened the trunk halfway, carefully shifted to one side the scoped Remington, the Car 15 and her 10-gauge, and pulled out the gunny sacks loaded with C4. Because of the SecMen posted at the plant's entrance, they couldn't take their long rifles inside with them, only their handguns. Her own current sidearm of choice, a compact 9mm Beretta 92 SBC, rode in a ballistic nylon clip rig, concealed under her t-shirt at the small of her back. Of course, if they got stopped with the three gunny sacks on the way in, the shit was going to hit the fan anyway. With the bags of explosives clutched in her hands, she rounded the side of the wag. She slid the gunny sacks into the back with Poet.
Whew. Looks like the biggest bunch of workers is coming up the street toward us. They're about 6 blocks away, and they don't seem to be in a hurry. Better get ready to move in 4 or 5 minutes, though.
Poet dumped out the contents of one of the sacks. Working as fast as he could, he cut down the big blocks of plastic explosive with his dagger and passed the resulting 1-pound chunks over the front seat to Ryan, who fitted the detonators and then slipped the finished bombs back into the sack. Not a J.B. Dix quality job for sure, but good enough for demolition work. When they finished the last charge, Hun opened the door and pulled the loaded bags out into the street. A mob of workers was passing on either side of the wag.
I better take the biggest, Gunny. It'll give me something to hide behind. I tend to stand out even in a crowd. Let's go.
Ryan grabbed the heaviest sack and slung it over his left shoulder. By holding the burden close to the side of his head, he could conceal his eye patch and scar. The three companions melded in with a silent, grim-faced flow of humanity. Like zombies, the workers shuffled along, eyes bleary, arms barely swinging. Ahead of them was the guard hut. The SecMen seemed much less interested in the people going in than they had been in those going out a few minutes before. It was understandable. These weren't potential chain gang escapees. These poor bastards were meekly arriving, ready to accept whatever fate dealt them. The SecMen had their backs to the crowd as Ryan, Poet, and Hun moved by. Ryan could see he was going to have a problem at the hangar door. The guards there were actually doing their job, looking over the incoming workers with what passed for professional interest. On top of that, Ryan was carrying a big gunny with him. Why would a worker bring something into the plant? If anybody was going to get hassled, it was going to be him. He swung the gunny sack from his shoulder and carried it in, one hand by his leg. At his side, Poet saw what he'd done and nodded his approval. Then he looked at Ryan's face and frowned. The eye patch. It was possible that the SecMen might recognize Ryan from the earlier encounter at the Gaudy. Ryan stripped the thing off and wadded it up in his hand. Head lowered humbly, after the fashion of his fellow laborers, he passed not 10 feet from the guards at the hangar door.
Would you look at that one? Man, is he ever fucked up!
Hey! Scarface! Come on over here, and we'll fix the other side for you.
Yeah, we'll fix it so it matches.
Ryan kept on walking. They had been too busy looking at his face to notice that he was carrying something. Once he was inside the refinery, Ryan immediately replaced his eye patch. He had worn it so long that he felt naked without it. Beneath its cover, his healed-over wound was truly horrendous. The missing eye, shrunken lids and socket, and the jagged white scar that divided brow and cheek like a lightning bolt contrasted shockingly with his brutally handsome, undamaged side. The wound to his soul that all could see. Ahead of them, a group of men in pinstriped overalls had climbed up on gantries on either side of the main thoroughfare. One man was pointing at individual laborers as they filed past this reviewing platform. Ryan didn't understand what was going on at first. He saw the group of set men standing beneath the gantry push into the crowd and yank those the bosses had indicated out of line.
Slow down, Ryan. They're pulling people to replace the dead ones from the previous shift. You don't want to be up at the head of the line when they've still got places to fill.
Ryan could see that Poet was right. After they dragged the workers to one side, the Sekmen were clapping leg irons on them. And he remembered what the runaway slave Paste had said about how they always chained the workers in pairs if the job was extra dangerous. The Sekmen were doing just that, linking the workers ankle to ankle. With Poet in the lead, the companions moved out of the flow of foot traffic. They angled around and between the bases of the rows of two-story tall holding tanks and were soon out of sight of the plant's main concourse. Ryan put his bag on the concrete, opened it, and took out one of the charges.
This one with the green wire is the demonstration mine. We'll set that last on our way out.
He took a small black oblong box from his trouser pocket.
This is the detonator. I'll stash the both of them here, behind the tank support, just in case.
He didn't have to finish the sentence. Poet and Hun knew what he meant. With all the Sekmen wandering about, there was no guarantee that any of them would make it back to the rendezvous point. They split up without saying goodbye. Goodbyes were bad luck. They each carried a sack of pre-rigged charges. Ryan headed for the north end of the plant, figuring that if the idea was to totally destroy the refinery, then the best place to start was the storage area for full gas drums. Ryan made his way down the concourse and entered the long adjoining shed without being challenged. Though he passed bosses and Sekmen, no one seemed to notice him in the chaos and noise. Inside the metal walled and roofed shed, the fuel drums were on pallets stacked three high. Because the barrels were so heavy, the workers used a ceiling crane and pulley system to do the stacking. Ryan moved around behind the tiers of drums, then reached in and stuck one of the charges between two barrels at floor level. He worked his way down the length of the shed, leaving behind five more of the deadly little packages. He spaced them and placed them so the explosions would begin at the wall that connected the shed to the plant, and so that the subsequent blasts from the igniting gas drums would sweep toward the dry lake, taking out the entire north side of the refinery. When he was finished, he returned to the factory proper, looking for other demolition sites. He mined the sides of the crude oil holding tanks and stuck his C4 charges on the I-beams that held up the three-story walls. After the fact, as he waited in the shadows for Hun and Poet to return to the rendezvous point, it seemed like they were using a whole lot of high-X for the job. Because he wasn't an expert like JB, he didn't really know what it would do. He'd never worked with so much plastic before. Poet appeared around the side of the tank. Hun returned a moment later. She went straight to the place where Ryan had hidden the conventional charge and reached in for it.
Can't set that yet, Hun.
What? Why?
Can't leave here until the next shift change. Not without getting hassled. Maybe snatched up by the Sekmen.
How long until the change?
4 hours.
Shit.
I don't know about you two, but I could use a few winks.
Ryan scooted his legs in under the massive holding tank in the gap between its bottom and the floor.
I figure the shift change whistle ought to wake me up. Damn thing's loud enough to wake the living dead. Night.
Shabazz nudged Zeal as Trader emerged from his quarters a full 5 minutes after a servant's knock had awakened him. The man looked pounded. His face was deathly pale. There were pain lines deeply etched around his eyes, and he walked with an agonized, almost bow-legged gait.
Rough night.
Well, I've had worse.
Well, there you go, always looking on the bright side.
Up kind of early, aren't we? It's still dark out.
Yeah, we've got some things to do before we get on the road. Do you want something to eat before we go?
Trader glared at Zeal for a long moment, wishing he had a blade or a gun close to hand.
No thanks. I think I'll pass on breakfast if it's all the same.
All right, then. Let's go.
Outside the big house, the armored pink Lincoln awaited them in the courtyard, as did a fleet of Sekwags and crews.
You first, Trader.
All right.
Trader climbed into the back of the Lincoln with Zeal and Shabazz. Then the whole entourage started to roll down the hill. Looking at the expressions of his fellow passengers, Trader had the feeling that they both were on the verge of breaking into laughter. Their private joke wasn't a secret, of course. It was still burning like a red-hot poker deep in Trader's guts. They drove a half mile or so,